Good morning, everybody. We are here again. It's Sunday morning, just after 9 o'clock in London, and I'm really thrilled that we're doing another week of Turning Towards Life. Lizzie and I were just talking about, quite aside from what this might have become for anyone else, what an important part of our week and life-giving part of our week this has become. So I am really pleased to be here and excited to be sharing with you and talking about a poem that's been enormously important to me and enormously important in the lives of many people I know. So welcome to you all.
I want to say good morning as well. And I suddenly had this feeling like we were on like a kind of breakfast radio show there or something. It's so cool that we can talk to people and be on a video. I mean, I'm finding myself very often hit by technology and thinking, I actually have no idea how this actually works and that I've plugged these little wires in and now people can hear us. I mean, telephones already get me and airplanes and things, but this is like also. Anyway, so I'm slightly thrown in this moment. I realise by being in the miracle of how does this work? Anyway, so here we are, and I'm very glad to be here as always and considering this poem that Justin's brought to us. So good morning, everybody, and thank you again for being with us and joining us. It's such a joy to read all the comments each week and know that there are people who've watched and listened and recommended this to their friends as we see our numbers grow. So hello, everyone.
I'm just laughing to myself, Lizzie, that 1 week we should do a technical seminar on the network protocols and the technology that allows video to stream
Oh,
from
God.
machine to machine. But that might be a side project. I think maybe it's a parallel
Yeah, because I sit here going,
project
it's a
that needs to
miracle,
work.
and you probably sit here going, yeah, it's quite obvious how it works.
Well, I'm not sure it's obvious. I was remembering. Some of you who are watching this will know that I have a background in computer science. And actually, I don't know if I've told you this, Lizzie, I've recently got interested in all of that again, like really deeply interested, and I'm learning a very amazing programming language, which is giving me great joy and really exciting and interesting thing to do. But anyway, whilst you were talking, I was remembering that when I first studied computer science, the university that I was at, the research group were figuring out whether you could send video over the internet at all. That was their project. And they were incredibly excited that they had managed to have a camera in one place and a camera in another place, and that people had been able to talk with one another for the first time. And now this is just ordinary. This is just our everyday technology. And that is really an extraordinary thing. And I find myself feeling still amazed and also grateful that we can do this. That one of the things that keeps on striking me is we get to talk to one another and to people close, geographically close to where we are. But I also know that there are people who watch this from India and Afghanistan and South Africa and Kenya and America and Canada and, who knows where else, many, many other places. And that, is nothing short of miraculous. And I don't think there's been any time in history before now when it's possible for people to have an idea for something and for something that they want to say, and then to say it in a way that doesn't involve just speaking to the people who happen to be right where you live. It's never been possible before. So it's an amazing thing, and it feels to me like a great gift and a responsibility, actually, I'm realizing right now as we're talking to, if anyone who has something to say it in a way that can reach people, because there's so much that's being said these days that divides us from one another, that has us feel frightened and suspicious and loathing and self-righteous and afraid and all of those kind of things. So I know that we're only a small part in this. Also, this move that many people are making to say things that will go the other way. All of that because some people 20 and 30 and 40 and 50 years ago sat around wondering how you might divide a video up into bits and send it across the internet so that people at the other end could see it. Should we turn to our poem?
Yes.
Who's going first?
I'm happy to read first.
Okay.
Okay, so this poem is called Lost by David Wagoner. Stand still. The trees ahead and bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here. And you must treat it as a powerful stranger, must ask permission to know it and be known. The forest breathes. Listen. It answers, I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again, saying, here. No two trees are the same to raven. No two branches are the same to wren. If what a tree or bush does is lost on you, you are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you.
So I'm going to read it as well. Stand still. The trees ahead and the bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here, and you must treat it as a powerful stranger, must ask permission to know it and be known. The forest breathes. Listen. It answers. I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again, saying, here. No two trees are the same to raven. No two branches are the same to wren. If what a tree or a bush does is lost on you, you are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you. So I think I want to say something right away about this choice of poem.
Mm.
When Lizzie, when you and I came on and chatted to another before we began, and I said, I'm sure you know this poem. And you said, no, you hadn't seen it before. And I was thinking, I think I probably assume that everyone knows this poem, which of course there's no reason for them to do so. But the reason I think that is because of how necessary it's been for me so often. So I realize how often in the face of apparently being meant to know where I am, who I am, what I'm up to in the world, and being certain about it, and particularly when I get into comparison, which is so easy to do with, oh, I see this person or that person, and I say to myself, well, they're not lost, and feel my own, I think what I'm trying to say is how often what I feel is exactly this, like, I have no idea where I am. I have no idea really what I'm doing or what my life is pointed towards. I get glimpses, and I sometimes can convince myself that I know, like I can say things if people ask me, what are you up to? I can say things that sound coherent and convincing and all of those kind of things. But they're very rarely actually very convincing to me. And this poem, I think, is one of those, for me, it's one of those life-saving poems, which is what I make of feeling lost is that I'm in trouble, is that something terrible is happening, and that what I'm then meant to do is panic or run or hide or abandon myself, like take up something that's not mine to do. I can come back to this poem, and I think that there's so much I could say about particular lines in it, and maybe we'll get to this, but this morning, it's the final two lines that move me so much, which is, "You are surely lost." And I think, yeah, that's right. So stand still. And then trusting that the forest knows where I am, and that my job, and there is work to do, my job is to let it find me.
Mm.
It's rescued me so many times.
Mm. Yeah. This reminded me, Justin, I had a conversation with a coaching client on Friday about all the times, you know, to use this language, which I didn't have at the time because I hadn't read this poem yet, but all the times in our lives where the forest has tried to find us and we pushed it to one side, or we thought, oh, that's just what everybody's like, or those things just happen. You know, those events in our lives that were pointing us towards something, you know, we were being found, and then it takes something really, really further down the line to point us back into those places that are moments of finding, being found, which we didn't recognize. So for me, this in my life, for example, is all of the ways, like when I was little, if somebody was in trouble at all, I would run upstairs and get my nurse's outfit on and my little first aid kit and come down. So, I mean, my dad had a kidney stone, so I used to stick plasters on his feet. So there was something in me always wanting to be with people and do something if they were in pain. And it took quite a while, and actually probably even till yesterday, for me to recognize lots of the things after that conversation. I was really thinking, my goodness, so what are all the events in my life that are pointed to this work? And it strikes me that the forest was finding me in those moments. I was being shown something, not through seeking. And likewise, the forest is finding me again by allowing those memories to be here and for me to see the foundness that's always been present in all these little happenings in my life. And so as you're speaking, I'm just feeling into the way that the forest finds us again and again, and how asleep we are to that, even if we look back in the past to find places. But this is the thing I was doing with this client, is I was saying, well, so tell me about some things in your life, because she's really wondering what to do with her life and what her life is for. And we were speaking about the moments that may have shown her something that she might not have been awake to at the time, but what were they? And as we started speaking, like, more and more things arose that showed us something. So it's really moving to feel that the stillness might have those things revealed to us, either in the moment or even looking back on our lives and finding out that the finding was having an attempt. So that's what's getting me now, is that, as you say, those last, draw our attention to those last two lines.
Yes, I'm very struck by this way you're talking about it, which is, as I listen to you, I have this feel of part of what there is to do in our lives is to know that there's a way in which we're always lost. We never really know where we are. And at the same time, to pay attention to the clues that are being presented to us again and again and again about the kind of forest we might be in, or our place in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's a different move. Some people in the world, well, I was just mentioning to you, Lizzie, before we came on, about this film I saw last night. I went to see The Phantom Thread,
mm-hmm,
with Daniel Day-Lewis in it, which is about a very, very successful fashion designer. And when you look at him, I'm just picking him because he's a good example of something that's very common in our culture, which is people who really look like they know what they're up to.
Yeah.
It turns out, if you see the film, that what he's really up to and what he's really doing in his life isn't really what it looks like. Mm. So the obviousness, the outer trappings of our lives, where we take on an identity and try to sort of shore ourselves up with it and go, well, I'm a coach, or I'm a, you know, a doctor, or I'm a mother, or I'm a whatever it is that I am, I'm a friend. All of these different roles that we have, they all have truth to them, but they're a tiny part of what it is to be who we are, most of which we can't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that the feeling of lostness, maybe what this is that the times when we feel very profoundly lost aren't necessarily a disaster or a failure or a terrible event to be avoided. So I feel lost and then try and sort of shore myself up by diving into one of these identities that I have and say, well, this is me. In fact, it's a time to stop and to listen and to watch for all the other inklings, glimpses that are coming our way that might show us that the place that we're in is a place called here, and that it's strange to us. So this part that David Wagoner says at the beginning, which I find so moving, which is wherever you are is called here.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to treat it like a powerful stranger. And a powerful stranger is someone who we really don't know, but is not inconsequential, really important. And we have to ask permission. We have to be able to say, I'm standing in a sacred place here and I barely know it. And I'm really confused and I really don't know who I am. And apparently I'm meant to know who I am. But instead of then trying to sort of construct it in a way that will look familiar or will look good to other people, there's this other move you can also make, which is to go, I really am lost.
Mm-hmm.
Teach me.
Yeah.
And then pay attention in the way that you're talking about. So there's something in here about the discipline of paying attention to what's around us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, Justin, I'm just really struck by, as well, this treating here as a powerful stranger. And, you know, as people, as humans, it's like the invitation of this poem is to stand still. And as humans, we're really not kind of culturally great at that. That there's this kind of momentum, this kind of moving on, this kind of validation from looking busy and looking sorted and moving fast and being efficient. So mostly I think here is missed. Like if you look at every moment of a day, I wonder how many moments are actually deeply encountered or received. And certainly in my own life, it's very minimal when I'm really straight with myself. And the fact that it's a stranger and that we must ask permission to know it and be known suggests to me that there's a consciousness required, you know, a kind of participation that's required on our part to be in relationship with here and to not stop at taking it for granted that it is given, but to be in receipt of it. We have to bring ourselves to it in this way that David Wagoner is asking of us, which is to say, I would really like to know here, and I would like to be known by here. Like it's two way. And I think that's what's really moving to me about the relational part of this, that it's not just that we get really present to the tree, what a tree is, but that we are also, that presence is available to us to be on the receiving end of as well. That we're part of the world, we're not separate from the world, the physical world, the unseen world even. And so to treat here like that feels like life is really intriguing. You know, that there's a kind of, whoa. Life isn't just to be gotten through. Like, what if life itself is this deep, endless invitation that we barely even scratch the surface of? And to get present to our ground, the pavement, the scarf I'm wearing, the computer that we're on right now, these earphones. I mean, I don't know what anything is when I'm straight with myself about it. I really don't. And I'm just feeling really kind of I don't know, like blown, like a into smithereens or something by this poem.
Implied in what you're saying is the responsibility for us to pay a really particularly fierce kind of attention to the world. And I say it that way, I say fierce attention, because this is what I heard you say was to know and be known involves our participation, involves our presence, involves our noticing the world around us. And for me, it's a counter to this move that can be so easy for me is to go, I'm lost, stay still. That's easy for me to do. Hide under the duvet.
Yeah.
You know, and just, oh, I'm lost. Yeah. Instead, this is listen, because what's around you will answer. I've made this place for you. And if you were a raven, no two trees would look the same. Whereas it's so easy for us to go, oh, trees, seen those before.
Mm-hmm.
I know where I am. No two branches are the same. There's something to be found in everything when we're willing to bring a dedicated enough kind of attention to what we're in the middle of.
Yeah.
And then even though we don't have a clue, I'm really with you on this. That becoming an adult is partly finding out that all the people you thought had a clue didn't have a clue, and neither do you. Yeah. And everyone's certainty is a kind of facade and a kind of barricade against not knowing what we're right in the middle of.
Yeah.
And I really found this happening, you know, of course, because I'd the poem had come into view for me a few days ago, actually when I was sitting in the cinema last night, and the film is set in the 1950s. So I found myself paying attention suddenly, and it was really surprising to me, but it's a great example for me of, I think, one of the things this poem is pointing at. I had been paying rapt attention to what was going on the screen. And then I found myself, like the screen went into the background and all the people around me came into the foreground. And there were, you know, a few hundred people in the cinema. And I started noticing us. And one of the things that I noticed about us, the thought train that came for me was, gosh, none of the people who are depicted in this film would be alive now. And in a similar amount of time, none of us who are in this room will be here in 80 years' time. Nobody here will be alive in all likelihood. We'll all be gone. And that in itself, it seemed to me, was a way of the surroundings saying, here, I have made this place around you.
Yeah.
Wake up, you're here. And it was both very moving and sobering, and life-giving and centering and awakening in a, I mean, you know, in a sort of very immediate way of, gosh, I really am here. And I'm being shown this again and again and again by what's around me, even though I'm totally confused.
Yeah, I feel like this confusion as well, like I'm getting more and more curious as to whether this lostness is in some ways more aligned with the nature of life itself. You know, like that being confused and sitting in the cinema and feeling like you were just describing, there's a way that we're told to know things is to be a good human, or to have things organized is to be a good human being, or to have success by the standards of what's out there to be referenced as success is the sign of a good human being. And the more confused I get, the more alive I feel. And aliveness feels more important than many, many other things that I felt my life was oriented towards through being educated and taught how to be in business or whatever. And so this kind of lostness and this confusion, even the word lost feels like something means you've got to be found. But then I get really curious about, well, what if lostness is the nature of things in some way, and maybe not all of it, but there's a big element of the lostness that is, it's creative, it's alive, it's unpinnable, downable, it's mercurial, it's undefinable. And so there's obviously feelings that come with lostness, and sometimes we may be afraid, and sometimes we may feel inadequate, and sometimes we may feel low and despondent. And yet, if we might take this poem at its word and be with our lostness and listen in a different way than we've been able to before, maybe there's a way that we can align with life itself, and, as you said, allow something to find you. But then even in the foundness, it doesn't mean you're not lost, but we just get good at being lost. You know, we just get really present to the lostness and accept being here with a capital H. And maybe that lostness is inherent in here-ness.
Yeah. David Wagoner has this line right near the end where I think he's talking about at least two different kinds of being lost. So there's the kind of lost where we own up to our lostness and our confusion in the way that you're saying, and we go, I really am lost. And we have that be an opportunity to let what's around us teach us. So where he says near the end, if what a tree or a bush does is lost on you, you are surely lost. I think in a different way to the initial lostness, there's a kind of, just to get overcomplicated in language, being lost in our lostness, as opposed to being alive in it or awake in it or attentive in it. And that sometimes what happens when we still ourselves enough and pay sufficient attention is that we find in our lostness there is something for us to do. So you know, when you were talking about before about being organized or being successful in conventional terms, whatever, and I was thinking, yeah, very often those are themselves a means to something that's really important to happen in the world. They're necessary to happen in the world. But we can be in them as a way of pretending that we're not lost. Sorted, or we can be in them as a response to listening deeply, paying close attention, and being shown, there really is something for me to do here. I can see from where I am that there's work for me to do, that there's service for me to be, that there's a contribution that is calling to be made right from where I am with this body and this history and this something that's surrounding me. So it's so interesting as we've been talking about it, as I can feel from what you're saying, that there's a call in this poem, both to stillness and being found, but also when we're able to say here, very often to taking care of something, to turning towards something or somebody, to taking up a responsibility in the world. It's just that it might be really different, surprisingly different, or it might be the same thing, but with a whole different understanding about where I am to what I'd taken it to be. And that's one of the things that the forest, trusting that the forest knows where we are and that we have to let it find us, is important as well as a way of turning into life rather than turning, going asleep to it. I say this, as I've said a number of times as we've been talking, from the position of knowing how easy it is, finding it so easy to hunker down and go to sleep when I'm lost in the forest.
I just feel so kind of welcomed to the lostness and the confusion by talking about this. And a little less fearful of dropping whatever facade I'm employing to protect myself from this. And, you know, when you were talking about things coming from success and doing things in the world, like, I really feel that. And I also feel like there's so many folks wandering around needing some kind of permission to be okay with the feeling lost, even if it looks like they've got their shit together. You know, I was talking to a friend yesterday and she was telling me something about someone and their Instagram feed looks so fine. And then she said, what's really going on? And I thought, oh my goodness. You know, the way that these days through technology, we see the good bits of people's lives. And so often underneath it all, there's really, really, really big confusion and lostness. And kind of societally and culturally, we just tell the good stories. So then that perpetuates our own isolation because we think, well, they've got their stuff together, they're all right. I'm the only one flailing about here, lost in a forest, not knowing who the hell I am or what I'm supposed to be doing. But I would also say that I don't think anyone's outside of that. You know, I've met loads and loads of people in my life now and doing the work that we do and that I did previously. And I met like really lots and lots of people and talked to lots of people really meaningfully. And I've yet to meet anyone who isn't in something like this lostness or confusion, even if on the outside it all looks fine. It only takes a couple of questions to know that this is really universal and that if we might turn towards it, our lostness, our confusion, our not knowing, and be together in it, the whole kind of structure becomes less of a house of cards, if you know what I mean. It becomes visible to us, the ways that we're defending and protecting and keeping ourselves apart from. So I'm really feeling gladdened by lostness and invited by confusion. And noticing how it really helps me to be with other people, to be all right with that and not try and get people out of it or myself moving on from it or something. So I feel somehow in, I don't know what the word is, like in awe of the lostness and the confusion and opening to let it be my teacher.
Maybe this can be our side project, which is Instagram feeds.
Yeah.
Seriously, where we get to say what's really going on. Everyone gets to say what's really going on, so we can do something to puncture, cut through the particular kind of suffering there is in our world, where we imagine that, like you said, that everyone else has it together.
Yeah.
So we are at our what seems to be our newly found finishing time, Lizzie, which is about 37 minutes after you begin. I'm so glad to do this. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm grateful to all of you who've joined us either this morning or later. And I know that our plan is to be back next Sunday, and we'll see you then.
Bye, everybody. Happy Sunday.